CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and friend Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. Africa, Johannesburg, Reuters. BRICS leaders met to plot the future course of the bloc of developing nations. But, writes Reuters, divisions reemerged ahead of a critical debate over a potential expansion of the group intended to boost its global clout. BRICS again are Brazil, Lula da Silva, Russia, Vladimir Putin not attending, India, Prime Minister Modi attending, China, General Secretary and President Xi Jinping attending, and South Africa, the host, President Cyril Ramaphosa. So only Putin is not there, and we're told the reason is that South Africa is a signatory of the Hague, and the arrest warrant would come forward, and that would be difficult. So Putin is not attending, remotely so. However, the argument is not over Putin. The argument is over the applicants to the BRICS, including in Africa, Ethiopia, Gabon, Algeria, Egypt, more to come. In South America, Argentina, Lula da Silva supports its application, and Cuba, and Bolivia in South America. The big player would be Indonesia in Southeast Asia. The large population and spreading into the South Pacific. But I ask Gregory, first of all, these divisions that are emerging, this is not a natural organization. I'm told that it was sort of a banker's idea 20 years ago. But right now, the People's Republic of China's representatives say they want this to emerge as a new organization that matches and competes with the G7. Is that a practical wish, Gregory? Thank you.
Well, actually, it's a pretty stupid statement because it's nothing like the G7. The G7 is literally the premier economies in the world, or most of them. This is a grouping of disparate countries who are in this to achieve some kind of economic benefit. You're right in saying that this was a banker's idea of a geopolitical bloc, and it was there were Wall Street bankers who came up with the idea of places to do safe investment of U.S. funds offshore. It didn't really work out that well, but it started to create an impression that this could be a group of countries which could be recipients for international investment and trade, and that's where it's going. And this is a trading bloc which, at the moment, favors Russia and the People's Republic of China. And it's the start of building, if you like, a new economic bloc to rival the West. So, yes, it will enable these states to deal in currencies other than the US dollar. It will get them back with where the world is going anyway, into a world of barter, counter trade, different currencies, bilateral balances of payments and the like, so that these countries are saying, well, this is just another way we can trade and make money. Nothing wrong with that. There's no automatic ideological commitment of the BRICS states, and particularly an expanded BRICS, with Russia. Now, it would be logical for a country such as Indonesia, an enormous economy, well, about $1.5 trillion GDP, which has been doing business with China and Russia for the past 50 years or so since independence from the Netherlands after World War II. The United States has been, since World War II, active and aggressive in trying to dominate Indonesia so that it doesn't go too far along the path of friendship with Beijing or friendship with Moscow. In fact, even in the post-World War II era, Indonesia's first president, Sukarno, was seen as the alternate, big communist figure between the Russian and Chinese, between Mao and Stalin. He was ultimately deposed, and you have now a capitalist, middle-of-the-road type of government in Indonesia. But they still trade with Russia, and their biggest investor is still People's Republic of China. The United States literally forced the Indonesian government, through a variety of pressures in the last year or two, to abandon its orders for more Russian advanced jet fighters, which is why Indonesia, which was offered the F-15, which is a very advanced U.S. fighter, and F-16s, more F-16s, but instead Indonesia, just so that it wouldn't fall, pull away from Russia and go straight into the U.S. camp entirely, decided to buy French fighters, the Rafale fighter, which is a very advanced fighter aircraft. And by the way, the presence of Rafale fighters in Indonesia does make the Australians a little nervous, because Indonesia has a history of on-again, off-again relationships with Australia and sees Australia as a potential threat to its continued control of areas like the western part of the island of Papua New Guinea. So it's interesting. These countries all have different reasons, a lot of them economic, for seeing BRICS as an attractive alternative. But we do see this as the start of the world's trading patterns pulling away from the global dollar dominance, which we saw for, essentially the past 40 or 50 years.
Let me read a statement by Xi Jinping at the opening of the summit in Johannesburg. "Right now, changes in the world, in our times, and in history are unfolding in ways like never before, bringing human society to a critical juncture." And the statement read and then played in the BRICS by the president of Russia, Mr. Putin. "We cooperate on the principles of equality, partnership, support, respect for each other's interests, and this is the essence of the future-oriented strategic course of our association, a course that meets the aspirations of the main part of the world community, the so-called global majority." Gregory, I think that they were looking over each other's shoulders when they prepared these statements. They're looking to the future. That's a great selling line, Gregory. Have we got something to match it?
Well, we used to have an ideology which could match it. What we now have is the West pushing an agenda which is basically do as we say or else. Russia and the People's Republic of China are saying, hey, we just want to trade with you, we'll invest with you and the like. China does have an ideological agenda. Russia has a trading agenda. So it's interesting. The differentiation between the West and Russia and the People's Republic of China is disappearing in the eyes of much of the world population. The U.S. in particular, and Western Europe before it, have lost so much prestige that they don't have the influence they once had. And the question for Washington is, how do you revive a sense of U.S. prestige and authority, which automatically makes the dollar very attractive? You can't do it when you're involved in highly visible domestic political discussions which do not look anything like a democratic debate to the rest of the world. You can't do it while you're building up such massive debt levels that your economy is in danger of being overwhelmed by debt service. So the U.S. really has to start thinking about this holistically, as does Western Europe. The European Union doesn't even think about it at all. Britain is starting to think about it again. How do you revive prestige by getting your economic and social house in order? And we're not seeing the U.S. coming anything like close to that situation. Quite the contrary, we're seeing a deepening of domestic divisions within the U.S. polity, which are being reflected on the world stage and every day costs the U.S. in terms of prestige and influence. And therefore, we see states which once emulated the United States or sought to emulate the United States are no longer doing so. Yes, people still flood into the United States when they get the chance, simply because there is still more money available to immigrants than is available in, say, Africa or Latin America. But that doesn't mean that the U.S. is still the source of inspiration and pride and prestige to the rest of the world.
China and Russia are looking to expand BRICS. I don't know their lists yet. It's significant to me that Lula da Silva says Argentina, a country that is more in debt to the IMF than any other. It has that distinction. But Gregory, there's a suggestion here. This is not about economics. This is about a bloc of nations that opposes the United States and its NATO allies. Am I being too cynical here to say that Russia and China can go forward saying they're with us and what have you got to Washington?
Oh, yes, it's a bargaining chip for these people, especially the indebted people. And look, it's not just Argentina, which is highly indebted not only to the IMF, but to the People's Republic of China, and can't and is a serial defaulter on its debt. But you've got countries like Algeria, which have a lot of energy resources, but which are collapsing economically and politically, and they're looking for, if you like, a bailout in a sense. And Russia has, and the Soviet Union before it, have been that for Algeria. But you're finding the prosperous, independent and confident countries like Morocco, for example, not interested in that. Ethiopia is interested in joining BRICS largely because the United States government has fostered the breakup of Ethiopia and hasn't fostered the return to a united and pro-Western Ethiopia that it should have been promoting.
I want to mention three countries that could be looking to make BRICS some kind of solution. That is, Iran wants in, Saudi Arabia wants in, UAE wants in. They're supposed to be adversaries, but they all want into BRICS. What does it do for them?
Well, it gives them more trading options. I think you'll see a more complex use of currencies, including maybe they'll come up with something like the West came up with in the 60s, the basket of currencies concept. What you're looking at is a merger, if you like, of the trading bloc of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization with the new BRICS. So basically, as far as strategic alignments are concerned, this becomes essentially a non-Western trading zone, which could be very, very powerful, may not be as efficient or as successful as the West, but it would be enormous in terms of numbers of people and in terms of overall economic value. So it becomes profoundly important strategically. The question is whether the People's Republic of China will be in any shape to be a major player in it, because let's face it, People's Republic of China is now in total economic freefall. Its military, if it is put to the test against Taiwan, is going to bring about not only massive cost to itself as well as to the rest of the world, but it would also bring about the destruction of the Communist Party government in China, because it would result in, for example, major assets like the Three Gorges Dam being destroyed, and with that, the whole fabric of Beijing and Shanghai would go. So you're looking at a situation where the main drive, one of the main drivers of this new BRICS geostrategic bloc are concerned, is that one of the main drivers is collapsing and is about to, I think, show that collapse on the world stage in a way which will throw everything, including the future of Africa, up for grabs.
Is this a win for Russia, joining in a trading bloc and not having to talk about the reverses in Ukraine?
Absolutely. Well, the fact is that Russia is not getting reverses in Ukraine. Russia is really at a point where it has won the Ukraine conflict, because all the West can do is keep throwing more fuel on the fire, but it still can't make Ukraine a winning state, because it doesn't have the manpower, particularly the trained manpower. We see the president there throwing away his resources, his human resources there, at a wanton and reckless rate. And we're likely to see, for example, the military in Ukraine removing the president at some stage in the near future, simply so that they can negotiate a stable end to this. So I wouldn't overplay the collapse, if you like, of Russia in Ukraine as being as seeing the BRICS situation as a diversion. Quite the contrary, Russia is on an expansionist mode.
Okay.
Yes, the war has done enormous damage to Russia and has redrafted, if you like, the Russian economy, but it's still capable of expanding. The collapse or the decline in the value of the ruble against the US dollar is significant, because it does actually make Russian ability to sell grain and fertilizer and energy on the world market so much more profitable for Russia, because it can sell, it can discount prices and the like. So, you know, the interesting thing is that, yes, Russia, to answer your original question, Russia is is the one which is capitalizing most on this change in Africa.
Gregory Copley,
and BRICS.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I wanted to leave a moment for our King Charles III report when we come back. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.